Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And it's a beautiful Sunday here in WPVC, even if it's a little cloudy outside in your world. Thank you for staying with us after a beautiful, lovely, funny, sweet, and ranty homegrown episode. We are going to talk politics and elections with my friend Meg Hubeck. Meg, how are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
I'm doing really well. I appreciate you being here. Because it's got to be a busy time of year for you. Meg's from the UVA Center for Politics. Because you got nothing to do there right now, right?
Well, this is a very busy time. Usually I'm not the one here talking about the elections, but I have the chance to do so today. Very excited to be here. We're really busy with lots of projects. We have the American Democracy Conference coming up this week. On the 16th at Alumni Hall, and we have a Common Grounds event coming up at the end of the month. So we have lots going on.
And there's lots going on around the state of Virginia because the election is on Tuesday, November 7th.
That's the best part of living in Virginia.
Get out and vote.
Every year.
That's right.
All year.
There's never one of those down years.
No. That's what makes it so exciting to live here.
Is it?
It is.
It's not that we did it wrong and we don't get to catch our breath. It's that we did it right.
Of course.
We always have something to do.
Of course, we're Virginia. We're always right.
And we'll find out on the morning of Wednesday,
right?
November 8th.
It's exciting. It's always something to look forward to. I say working in politics that election day is a little bit like being an elf in Santa's workshop. We're always busy right before the election, and we never really know what's going to happen. It's kind of exciting.
But we are going to be talking about politics and elections with Meg Hubeck. She is from UVA Center for Politics, the Director of Instruction, the Youth Leadership Initiative.
Yes.
We'll be talking about that a little bit throughout
Great.
The hour as well. But I want to talk about the elections, the upcoming election day, again, Tuesday. Please go out and vote. I'd love to tell you it didn't matter who you voted for, but it does a little bit to me. But please go out and vote. We like to see the percentages be as high as possible for those folks.
Politics is a good thing.
Politics is a good thing.
That's our slogan.
You might want to rethink that. One of the things that we chatted about back and forth in preparation of today's program is the fact that it's, you know, the topic that has gotten the most notice in preparation for Tuesday is certainly about the governor's race.
Yes.
But there has been a lot of buzz about many of the local level elections, and a lot of that having to do with the fact that there have been candidates at almost every race, Democrats against incumbent Republicans, many independents. Talk about that.
Well, it's really interesting because in 2015, in the same kind of cycle, 79 House of Delegate races went uncontested. And this year in 2017, that number has dropped to 33. So if you're thinking, well, what I'm seeing in my own community, in Waynesboro, but also in Albemarle, is that we have people actually running against incumbents. And I think in the 13 years that I've lived here, I can't think that that has been an option. I can't remember when it was last an option. So there's a lot of energy out there. I really saw after last year's presidential election, a lot of people who were interested in politics, but didn't get involved with it, didn't get involved with what was going on in their communities, or didn't get involved in supporting candidates, have really gotten vocal. I have a, you know, out in Fluvanna, in Waynesboro, in Stanton, in Augusta County, here in Albemarle, we have lots of people who have stepped up and really gotten involved in the process this year. So you're seeing races like Kellen Squire here in the Albemarle area. You have Michelle Edwards running, and you have Angela Lynn, who are really making a strong effort to get out and meet with people and kind of hear what's going on, what people want. And I think that's what politics is all about, is actually getting the candidates out to actually campaign with and for the people. So I think that's been exciting. There's a lot of energy out there right now.
Now, one of the first election races that you mentioned to me was Kellen Squire, who's running for the Virginia House of Delegate offices in 58, which is Rockingham, Green, part of Albemarle, Fluvanna, versus Rob Bell, who's an incumbent from 12 or 14 or maybe even more years now.
Yes. And he's, you know, they're both really great candidates, but Kellen Squire has really kind of come out of the gates in a very quick and very meteoric kind of way. I mean, I think I hadn't heard of him really up until around until after the events here in Charlottesville. And since then, that's kind of all I've been hearing about from friends, colleagues, people that I run into. If you listen to his ad, he is a very, very down to earth. He's a nurse. He works hard, and he states that he really wanted to get involved because he felt like after last year's presidential election, and then also after what was happening here in Charlottesville, that normal people, that regular citizens, needed to run for these seats and at least get their voices heard so that their issues can make it to the floor of the delegates, House of Delegates in Richmond.
Again, our guest today, Meg Hubeck from UVA Center for Politics. Meg, when you mentioned Kellen Squire to me as a candidate against strong incumbent Rob Bell.
He's been hardworking. He definitely is out with the people all the time, Rob Bell, and he's definitely better funded.
You said that Kellen Squire was very, quote, very interesting in light of August 12th. And I would think that many of the folks listening to today live, maybe not via podcast, August 12th, the weekend of the events in Charlottesville,
the alt-right rally
in Charlottesville. What about August 12th with Kellen Squire? I didn't pick up on that immediately.
Yeah, I haven't talked to him about it, of course, but I think, and I think this goes for a large percentage of people who live here, is that the silver lining of that horrible cloud of having people come here and act in such very dangerous ways was that it was a wake-up call for people who were just sitting by. Kind of, I often talk about politics and civic engagement as being ready to get on the bus. So the Freedom Riders, if you think about that, they had to be prepared and empowered and ready so that when they needed to get on the bus and ride south, they could. So I often use this analogy when I'm teaching or when I'm talking to people about politics, is how do you get yourself ready to be on the bus? Well, unfortunately, here in Charlottesville, August 12th may have been the breaking point for people to say, you know, I've had enough of other people speaking for me or coming to town and taking over. And what I really need to do is I need to stand up and act in defense of social justice, in the defense of democracy, and in kind of in defense of everything that we believe in. And so I think maybe people are going back and looking at some of their old high school civics classes, or maybe they're calling me up. A lot of people have been calling and talking to me, coming in to meet with me about how do I transmit and empower, engage and excite young people and myself to actually get in the game, because I think a lot of people are frightened. The polarization that we've seen in Virginia, but nationally, really has kept the moderate middle from feeling like they can speak out and act. They really feel like they've been hijacked by the either far wings of either party, and it was keeping them from actually speaking out. I know sometimes I say this all the time when I go to a party and people ask me where I work. When I say the Center for Politics, I'm often looking for the door. Because, of course, when people hear you work for politics, they think you're a politician. And then they have these negative connotations of both politics and politicians. And I don't want to get into an argument. So that's where we are. The Virginia Political Action Project has this awesome graphic on their website that shows political polarization in Virginia from 2012 and 2016. So I tell you, every citizen needs to really go on there and look at this. And what it does is it's an animated graphic, and it shows the amount of polarization that has occurred in the state. And that means people, instead of being moderates and in the middle, people tend to associate with a party, either the Democrats or the Republicans, and people are isolating themselves according to their political beliefs, as well as socioeconomic status. So what's happening is we're getting further and further apart, and that 80% that used to be moderates that sometimes vote for Republicans and sometimes vote for Democrats, particularly in down ballot races, they're not doing that anymore. They're voting straight ticket because views have polarized so intently. It's really been going on probably since 1965, 1968, but I think we're at a turning point now where we really have to do something about that. So I think Kellen Squire is kind of a part of that, a person who really probably was very civically engaged, probably voted every year, and obviously cares about the community. And I think what happened here showed him that if the 80% of us who want to be in the middle, we don't want to be on either side. We want to be in the middle. We want to work together. We have to empower ourselves for how to do that. And I think that's an example of that right there.
So is that one of the reasons? I mean, how would you describe or list some of the reasons for people not being engaged in the political system?
Well, I think the first thing that comes to my mind is gerrymandering. I live in...
Oh, we can get into that in detail in a little bit later, but...
I think that's one of the problems.
Just feeling people, left out because of gerrymandering?
Well, when you redistrict to keep someone in power, usually you have an uncontested race or one where your vote isn't going to matter. So if you feel like your vote's not going to matter, then of course, why should I go?
Right.
And then if it doesn't matter, then again, why should I speak up about an issue? People might brand me as, oh my gosh, you know, a snowflake or other term that, you know, we use to describe in a derogatory way to describe people to the far right or the far left.
Right.
You know, a right wing nut job, a snowflake. The one I hate the most is libtard. I hate that word. And people don't want it. That causes people dissonance. They feel uncomfortable with that. They don't want to be that.
Right. That's what they don't want to go to.
Right. That's why they're afraid.
A party for and talk about politics.
That's right.
And then leave the party.
Right. Because everyone's going to talk about them. Right. Or what's going to happen on social media the next day when people post their pictures. And it is a concern. But I think people have had actually have had enough of being spoken to in those terms. And I think people are ready to say, I don't care anymore. I've got to do something.
Again, our guest today, Meg Hubeck, as we talk about the upcoming elections, some of the politics involved with that. Meg is from UVA Center for Politics, 15 minutes after the hour today. Meg, let's go back. We're going to get into gerrymandering a little bit more in the hour. I want to go back to some of the local, or not just local, but non-state elections, not the governor and lieutenant governor, et cetera.
Down ballot.
But I do want to talk about one of the local ones anyway, the Charlottesville City Council. You know, Nakia Walker was on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call back in September. There are two open seats.
Correct.
And I think there are six candidates, two Democrats,
running kind of together.
Two running Democrats who made through the primary.
Right.
And then, so that would leave four independents, one including Nakia Walker. I bring her up because I think for many people, she would be considered the strongest of the independents in terms of name and
I saw her on TV in an ad for herself, and I was completely impressed because, of course, I don't live in the city of Charlottesville.
Right.
I just, her manner, the way she addressed issues, I think was very appealing to a lot of people.
Does she have a real chance in a, does an independent have a chance running against two bonded Democrats in a Democratic city?
I think this, if it's going to happen, this is probably going to be the year. And I think a lot of that has to do with August 12th. And I think there is a lot of kind of upsetness or dissatisfaction with the fact that Charlottesville's city council has been entirely Democratic. And I think people are, the way that the situation was handled has caused people to become dissatisfied, so that if there is a chance for an independent, I think this is it. And I think she is a candidate, like I said, who really is speaking to the middle, and is really speaking to the citizen that I could tell that in her ad. So I found her really interesting and started just looking into her really just last week, because the ad was so down to earth. And it wasn't a negative ad. It wasn't any kind of this typical glittering generalities or bandwagon or any of that. It was really just her sitting down and talking about issues. And I think that's what citizens in Charlottesville are probably looking for. So I think it'll be difficult, right? It's a very Democratic city. However, I think if there is a year where an independent can get on the city council, I think this is probably the year. So that would be exciting, and that'll be a great race to watch. I bet all of Virginia will be talking about it.
What about the 13th district in the state of Virginia, which is where the transgender candidate Danica Rome, I believe is the pronunciation,
yes,
versus the long time incumbent delegate GOP Robert Marshall?
Oh, Bob.
Do you really think that there's any chance that Bob Marshall can lose? I mean, he won't. Not that, and as you said earlier, not that many of the incumbent candidates will go face to face with them, but he won't even talk about
her. He won't even call her by a name or by a gender meet with her because he feels it's against the laws of nature, he says. You know, I have talked to about a lot of people about this race. And again, it's going to depend on who shows up. But there is a chance for Rome. And I'll tell you, when I analyzed and read about their campaign, I was impressed. Again, she is, instead of dealing on social issues, which is, she's running in a fairly red district. It's a red district. So instead of taking on issues, social issues, she's taking on Bob Marshall on his own turf, which is traffic, which is something that he has always kind of made his, delivered to the people.
Right, because this is a Northern Virginia district.
Right, where that's a big issue. So she's really going after him on an issue that he thinks he has done well in and pointing out, in fact, the weaknesses. I think that is a really smart strategy. I'm not sure, you know, a lot of people, although they respect, you know, and have worked with Bob for a while, still his views are becoming less and less acceptable, I guess, is what you want to say. But
his his views haven't changed.
Yes.
While the rest of
us have.
The rest of the state and the people have modernized their views a little bit.
I think people made a big deal about the fact that they wouldn't debate or talk to each other. And I think part of that is because I'm sure that Mr. Marshall feels he's the incumbent, that he has more to lose in meeting with Danica Rome, and is probably reluctant to do such an event. And so I don't make a whole lot out of that. However, what I make a lot out of is the fact that she's running a very, very interesting and kind of innovative campaign, while Marshall's running kind of the same old way. So it's going to depend on who shows up on Tuesday. If it's, you know, older, more conservative voters, or younger, more diverse voters.
And we're going to get into that after we take our first break. It's 21 minutes after the hour as we talk about elections today, the Tuesday, November 7th election day, with our guest on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, Meg Hubeck from UVA Center for Politics. Hang tight. And here we are. Hopefully you're still with us, because I'm having fun.
Politics is fun. Yes.
Well,
and a good thing.
It's not always fun, because, you know, sometimes when I get up in the morning and I look at my phone for the news and I see the headline that just makes my stomach roll over, that's not always fun.
That's news. It's not really news, and it's not really politics. Politics is, I'm an optimist. I'm very Madisonian in this way. I'm always working to try to solve the problems. And so that's why I think politics is such a good thing, is that if you come to the table prepared, you can do something about the vision of politics as being corrupt and nasty. It's not. It doesn't have to be.
So let's talk about solving the problem. Because you are the director of instruction.
Yes,
Youth Leadership Initiative.
My baby.
What is the Center for Politics? What are you doing to promote civic participation in the area? Start with the younger group.
That is my wheelhouse. So my primary assignment at the Center for Politics, but I should start, our mission at the Center for Politics, our director being Larry Sabato, our mission is to increase civic engagement. I mean, we have a long, fancy mission statement, but basically we are doing the empowering people with the skills to get on the bus when it comes. So my job is to run the Youth Leadership Initiative, which is a free online website, your one-stop shop for teaching civics and government. So we primarily create resources for educators so that when students go to school and take a civics course, it's more than just reading the book and answering a few questions. We're really empowering them in the skills of discourse, debate, and compromise. We have over 70,000 teachers registered with our site nationwide. It's pretty exciting. Some of the things that we do we don't just want students sitting passively in their desks. We want them out there learning. So for the past 2 weeks, we ran a mock election for the states of Virginia, New Jersey, and then Utah's 3rd congressional district. But we also included a redistricting survey for students. And so in Virginia, we had over 20,000 students vote in the mock election. And I'm going to give all of you this is the very first time that I have announced the results of the 2017 mock election.
Now, would this otherwise be on the crystal ball?
No. Because we are our own entity. Our website is youthleadership.net, and I highly recommend that anybody check it out and encourage your schools and teachers to use it.
Sweet. I'll see if I can get Dan to put that on the
That would be great.
On the website. So now, what age group?
So that's K through 12, although we also have community colleges and universities.
So did the kindergartners get polled for this on who they would vote for?
Yes.
Okay.
They are included, really, and it's a non-scientific study. So don't anybody, when I give you the results, don't anybody call myself or Uncle Larry and telling him I'm angry because so-and-so won the mock election. It is non-scientific. It is just the idea. Civics, all year, every year. Civics, all year, every year.
Okay. So let's have the results, please.
Should we have a drum roll?
I'll see what I can do.
Okay. All right. So we're going to start with the race for governor. And so here we go. We, like I said, we had about 20,000 students across the state of Virginia participate. We thank all of those teachers immensely.
From Galax to Norfolk?
Well, you know, because I just got the results this morning, I haven't had a chance to delve into exactly where. But theoretically, yes. We have schools all over the state. Ralph Northam won, the Democratic candidate, with 49.89% of the student vote. Remember what I said. It is not a scientific experiment.
Okay.
Ed Gillespie ran behind him at 33.23% of the vote. And Cliff Hira got 6.2% of the vote, which is high for a third-party candidate.
Do third-party candidates often receive higher percentage in among high school and younger students?
Yes. They love third-party candidates.
Do they?
I think it represents...
That's because they're a little rebellious.
Yes. Okay. And they like to think out of the box, and they like to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
And I think that's great.
That.
I am too. And we always include third parties on our ballots.
Is my wife listening? Sorry about that. I retract that statement.
Jeez. Anyway, it was very interesting. And then on the redistricting question, we had students respond to, now I should clarify, on our website, we have a really awesome two-lesson series on redistricting. It's called The Case of the Curious Gerrymander. And the first part of the lesson basically talks about gerrymandering as it was written in the Constitution. And then we follow it through history. And we look at districts today, both in red states and blue states, because the problem is not limited to one party. It's both parties. And talk about what that means. And then in the second part, we have a simulation, and it's not online because we really are trying to teach young people how to communicate person to person like you and I are doing, as opposed to on a screen, which they're very good at doing. And there are push pins and rubber bands. It's big fun. And the students have to use three different methods to create districts. It's exciting. And so that prepared them for the vote. But now I'm going to give you the results. Students in Virginia, they had the option of a bipartisan committees that would create voting districts in the state, whether it could be nonpartisan, meaning it would be an independent people who are independently selected to serve on redistricting panels, or to remain the same the way it has been, which is the party in that dominates the General Assembly gets to set the agenda, set the districts. So 27.39% of the students, by no means a majority, chose bipartisan committees as they thought the best way to create voting districts, with nonpartisan redistricting coming in next at 23.65%. The percentage that wanted things to remain the same was 22.84%. So all three of those numbers are very close. But if you consider that the first two options show a preference for change seems to be something that young people care about a lot. And so
it still leaves 15.
At least 23.2% abstained, which means they probably didn't feel comfortable answering the question, which is fine, because it's not for real.
For the governor's race, how did they decide their vote? Were they given a class on the governor?
Well, that's interesting.
Were they shown the awful ads? Were they?
I hope not.
I mean,
Here's what happened.
Can we blame the teachers?
No.
I mean, can somebody say,
no.
My kid voted for that person? and I'm voted for the other. That's the teacher who taught them.
Oh, I mean, I've had a call like that.
That's what happens today.
I've had a call like that.
You blame the teachers. Those teachers are too liberal.
As a teacher, I will tell you, please don't blame the teachers.
Hey, Mike, my family comes from the teacher. I'm not blaming the teachers. My wife's an assistant principal. I am not truly blaming the
education. We don't just put this out there as something for kids to vote on. We have a series of materials, and one of those things is every year we do a lesson plan called Comparing the Candidates, mm-hmm. And they're blind statements from the candidates. And the students circle the one with which they believe.
Okay.
So we call the campaigns, we look at their websites, and then they evaluate themselves on a line between the two candidates, or in this case, three, because we have all kinds of versions. So we do actually have the students do research on one of the candidates and share that research with their peers. And then some schools do amazing things. I mean, some schools, I think out in Crozet at Henley, a teacher, a really great civics teacher, had the students actually role-playing the different candidates for the different races.
We had a teacher who did that in high school.
It's the best. I mean, the teachers, we give them the materials, and then they make them come alive, which I think is the most exciting part of my job.
So-and-so likes avocado. Oh, I hate avocados. I'm never voting for them.
Yes, and so, but we try to make it as real as possible, so the ballot looks exactly like when you go into the ballot box. It's pretty fun.
32 minutes after the hour with our guest Meg Hubeck as we talk about elections. Ms. Hubeck from UVA Center for Politics. I really like that. That's and you can find that information
at youthleadership.net.
I'm going to have to write that down.
It's kind of
so
a mouthful.
We can get it on our get it on the podcast information.
And there's a email address at the bottom of the page. So if you need to talk to me, I am the person that answers those. It's not a big organization, so anybody with questions can find me there.
I made a smart remark about the advertising.
Oh.
And you commented back about how you hope that the kids aren't making their decisions based on the ads.
No, I just thought some of them were beyond the pale. I mean, I have an 11-year-old son, and when we get up in the morning, we have the local news on, and so a lot of those ads were on. And some of them were quite, on both sides, were quite upsetting. And I know my colleague that I work with at the center said the same thing, that they kept the TV off because they didn't want their children to be exposed. I feel like I talked about it with my son and tried to explain why people put ads out like that, what was true or what was false about the ads based on facts that I know. And at the Center for Politics, at our Youth Leadership Initiative, we also teach media literacy. So we show students how to make sense of what ads you see on TV, what they mean, how to look to see where it came from, who is supporting it, so that you can really create your own truth. There's a different truth for everyone. However, if you have those skills, we think they're very important to young people. So I think some of the ads that were, I think one ad that particularly was troublesome was the ad that Hispanics for Victory, I don't know, that made in support of Ralph Northam and eventually was taken down, which was the one where the truck is chasing immigrant children and the truck has a Confederate flag on the back. That one was quite disturbing, as well as the ads that candidate Ed Gillespie had on talking about Ralph Northam favoring pedophiles,
right.
and the felon.
The John Bowen ad.
Yeah, because the facts behind that don't support what's in the ad.
My question is, we have a congressional budget office.
Yes.
That takes bills being put up at a federal level to judge their accuracy dollar-wise.
Right.
Has there ever been a bill put forth on a state level or a federal level that says some organization must see your ads and check them for truth before we allow them to run?
No. And I would imagine because people feel like you would be violating probably free speech, although, you know, that whole thing came up in People's United, what is it? The case with advertising,
true,
right?
True speech, free speech and slander.
But is it slander?
If it's inaccurate and you are possibly keeping someone from earning or getting a job.
But here's the thing. What they're saying is not technically inaccurate. They're not telling the whole story. They're leaving out the explanation. It's like sound bites.
Then it's that you can't, we can find a way to make this work so that you're, so that you put the so that your ad can be put, your ad goes to the Congressional Budget Office for advert for political ads so that it is then
a Truth and Reconciliation Committee for campaign ads.
So that you can put it up there, but it must be followed by 5 seconds of, you know, the green checks and red X's that show what's, you know, truth and...
I like the way your brain works. I think you should write that up, write the bill up, and submit it to your...
Well, David Toscano will be on at the end of the year, and maybe I'll present that to him.
You should. And that's really what citizens should do if they don't like it. But I'm a bit... So basically, in those ads, they take a kernel of truth and then they run with it. If you only put the kernel of the truth, a lot of people, because of polarization, are already really set in their beliefs of who they're going to vote for.
Yes, they are.
And so those ads just reinforce what they are already thinking. And although this sounds very sad and says something, I guess, about us as a country, negative ads work. Which is why Gillespie, who has just gotten a lot of financial support for his campaign as the race is thickening, getting tighter, has invested so heavily in negative campaign ads in these past couple weeks, which is a lot of what you're seeing. And then you, of course, saw Northam respond with the VMI ad where it shows him as an army doctor and... as a pediatrician, and him speaking and saying, you know, I would never do anything to hurt a child. That was a response to those very negative ads. And I don't know what the effect will be. Again, I'm going to go back to the statement I made, is that it will, of course, depend on who shows up on Tuesday. Who is more motivated? What do you think?
Well, the Washington Post editorial board said that... Ed Gillespie's ads were poisonous, incendiary, misleading, and designed to frighten Virginians.
Well, one of the things that he is known for is for dealing, Gillespie, is he's hard on, he wants to show that he's hard on crime, and that you're safer with a Republican in the governorship. And so those ads are appealing to people for whom those are their voting issues, to try to get them motivated to come out. You can say what you want, but the Washington Post is usually recognized as being a little bit on the left side.
Yes.
So, of course, I don't think that...
And so is WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
You know, but it is worth considering. See, that's lead media literacy. As a teacher... As an educator and as a citizen, if I hear something like that and I see those little blurbs on the bottom of the advertisements, I go to do some research to see what paper it is, find out about the paper or the media source where that information is coming from. It could very well be true, those statements that they put on the bottom. However, it is important to check and not just accept things because they are on TV. Just because something is on the television or on the internet or in your social media does not mean it is true. So it is the responsibility of every citizen to do their homework before you show up at the voting polls.
All right, let's
not take, to be motherly on you.
Let's take our second break. Our guest today, Meg Hubeck from UVA Center for Politics, where she's the director of instruction, showing me some instruction on how to remember what the Washington Post editorial board is all about. We shall be right back. All right. Hopefully everybody outside is enjoying the day while walking around listening to the Sunday morning wake-up call. I'm Rick Moore. We're talking about politics and elections because Election Day is 2 days from now. Remember, write it down. You want to be walking around proudly with that "I just voted" sticker.
You can't work at the Center for Politics and not wear a sticker.
I'm sure that that might lead to a very bad work review.
I don't know, but I'm not willing to take a chance. We're very proud of our stickers, and stickers are very important. So even at the Youth Leadership Initiative, we provide downloadable stickers for teachers because we know how important being recognized for voting is.
You know, I got, and this was something that I don't think I'd ever gotten before. I got mailers that showed the last 3 or 4 years and whether or not I had voted compared to the general public in my area. I don't remember whether it was my zip code or the area of Charlottesville, Albemarle, and said that while the company or whatever, whoever had sent this to me was not going to share this information with others, it was available.
Well, that's what they use when they if you've been noticing, there's been a lot of diversity in the poll numbers, particularly in the last week or so, and that they range. They're kind of all over the place. So, I mean, I have from Real Clear Politics, I have this list here showing the major polls for Virginia governor, and they're different. And one of the reasons for that is that information is now available to campaigns. So they know if you have voted and how many times you have voted, and they are targeting their calls based on that information. So there's some thought that pollsters that are actually doing that, they're more accurate than just randomly calling citizens on the phone. I found that really fascinating. It's a little Big Brotherish, don't you think?
Yes, I did find it a little Big Brotherish. It's
yes.
Exactly what I found it to be. When I opened it up, I was like, excuse me? You can stay out of my business. I mean, you know, okay.
This is where we are with technology. It has its ups and its downs, and I think this is something I'm proud. I mean, because I vote all the time.
Right.
But I'm not sure how I feel about them knowing exactly how many times I voted.
It's one thing for the people that I have to sign up with and
right.
make, you know, sign by my name, et cetera, to know. But for somebody else to just be able to go score this information and then send me a flyer saying, yeah, I know how often you'd voted, I found that bothersome. All right, so 15 minutes left. So let's talk about some specific things.
Okay.
Here's a question that I had for you to follow up on our negative advertising. My personal concern about this, you know, I think many people would be bothered by the type of advertising.
They say they are.
Right. So we'll go with that.
Okay.
My concern is, did the Virginia Democratic Party choose the right candidate? Because we noticed, or many people would say or question whether or not the National Democratic Party chose Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders out of it's her turn. You know, they had made that decision long before it was
and
ever became
a race.
They were
like fitting a square peg into a round hole.
Right. And we can, I don't want to get into this argument about, you know, how the race played out.
Go read Donna Brazile's book, I guess.
Yeah. But it was her turn, and it didn't matter really who was going to play out against it and all that stuff. And did the Virginia Democratic Party do the same thing? He was lieutenant governor. He wanted to be governor. So next step up, rather than Tom Perriello. And what, and at the time, the excitement that everyone was having, that the anti-Trump group was bringing, you know, everyone who was against President Trump that was out there, that put many of these candidates against the incumbent people, you know, right, in the races that we talked about at the start of the hour, that Tom Perriello may have brought to this role. And instead we have Ralph Northam, who is much quieter, who may not have been running the race against Ed Gillespie that Tom Perriello may have run. And that's because the Virginia Democratic Party is like, well, it was his turn.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with tradition here. And
inertia is the word that keeps coming to my mind. It's inertia. They're just kind of floating along because that's just what we do.
Well, here's my take on that. Of course, we're Virginia. We're very traditional. There is a certain way that Virginia does things. I am not from Virginia, I should clarify. And so that Virginia way, this kind of rules that we follow, has kind of pervaded a lot of our politics. However, I also think a couple of things about Ralph Northam. Would you admit that our governor, Terry McAuliffe, is a very interesting and energizing governor?
I would agree to that.
I always say I would not have liked to have been his teacher. Because I bet he was quite a hoot in the classroom. So I think that Northam is the response to that. He's very different from Governor McAuliffe in the fact that he is very reserved. He is very down to, you know, I would say, like, very moderate and very kind of normal Virginia in a way that Tom Perriello isn't.
He seems to be the quiet country doctor.
Yes, quiet country doctor. Who does not like a quiet country doctor? And you have to remember that although Charlottesville, Northern Virginia, and the Hampton Roads area are strongly blue and have a lot of power, there are quite a few voters in red areas who might support a good Virginia country doctor, especially if they are unsure about President Trump, but not to the extent to vote for a Democrat. So he was a good choice. Some things that I think the Perriello race kept Ralph Northam from really being able to campaign hard earlier because he was dealing with the primary challenge. And so that's one of the things that has kept him, I think, has kept the polls so close. Although he is a very good person, he isn't the most exciting person in the world. That can be a good thing, could be, you know, but it is something that I think really helps Terry McAuliffe is that he is quite the personality. You don't forget him when he leaves the room. Some other missteps I think that Mr. Northam has made. One was not going to the Buena Vista Labor Day event and really getting out into rural Virginia. They seem to have written off rural Virginia for him. Although I think he has some appeal there, and just going out would have helped to convince him.
Why wouldn't the quiet country doctor go there?
I
thought the point of... I know. And again, this is not me quietly yelling at you, but if you're gonna choose the quiet country doctor,
then you should go for it.
Then you, because you want some votes in that area, then send him to that area.
I think they thought after the Trump victory that the Trump supporters would be very harsh and that they would have difficulties. This is what I was doing when I did some reading. And so they really kind of shied away from it. And I think that's really hurting. And that's what's keeping those numbers so close. Because I think there were people on the fence that would have probably selected, had they seen him in person, had they heard him speak, I think they would have said, good country doctor, somebody who can really represent me in Richmond. But they're not hearing that because he doesn't come out to their part of the woods. And that is a missed opportunity. So I think that's a major misstep that would need to be corrected in the future. That being said, Gillespie, you know, is really getting out there and trying to meet with people, really spending a lot of money on ads.
And he's cut, 17% has cut down to 3 or 4, which is inside the...
Yeah, inside the, what is it called? The margin of error. It says MOV here, and I couldn't remember. So yeah, in some of them actually, yeah. So the in the major polls that we have,
margin of error.
Do you ever have one of those moments?
I have them all the time.
The margins of error are from 3.5 to 4.9. So the spread is quite large, and so anything really can happen on Tuesday.
I think we learned from the Trump-Clinton election that nobody really even trusts the polls anymore.
Yes.
I mean, I think the people who are doing the polls trust the polls.
Of course, because that's how they get paid.
But I think for many people, you hope that the poll that you want to be right is right, but otherwise you just kind of sit on the sidelines and go, I don't know.
I think that's why there's so much nervous energy in my office. I think we just don't know what's going to happen on Tuesday. That's exciting for democracy, right? That the race is close.
It just makes you eat chocolate and drink Alka-Seltzer. I mean, it's not...
Is there something wrong with that?
Thank you, Beck, here from UVA Center for Politics. Let me ask you some other things. We were talking about, and I don't want to just pick on Northam, because if you're listening to WPVC, you probably have an idea of where many people in this building are voting, although we can't say who Meg Hubeck is voting for and who everybody at the Center for Politics is voting for. But there are other missteps here. The rest of the ticket, the Democratic Lieutenant Governor candidate, Justin Fairfax, wasn't even put on one of the mailing lists.
That was one of the missteps I also had to speak about, and I think it's most unfortunate. I think a lot of people thought that this is a race for this is that it was Ralph Northam's race, and it's also his to lose. And these are the kind of missteps that are causing him to lose support in Northern Virginia. Justin Fairfax is from Northern Virginia. He's very popular with African American voters in that area, and so to leave him off at this time when we have so much turbulence, I think was a very, very big misstep. It's you know, as the incumbent party, you should have an advantage going into the governor's race, and so although we have seen Northam with a larger lead earlier on, that lead has dropped. And I think these missteps are showing you that you still, even if you think the race is yours to win, you still have got to run a really strong, very organized campaign on both sides. I think at this point, if I had to say, I would say I think the Gillespie team is running a more organized campaign at this time, and that's why they're seeing that race tighten up. And in fact, in one poll, they have Gillespie ahead of Northam, and that is in the Monmouth poll from October from October 12th to October 16th. They have him ahead. And I think that's why, because these ideas of fear and crime are really energizing Trump voters from last year. And so they're starting to engage in the race now, whereas Northam had a lead when people weren't really paying attention.
Well, just a couple minutes left. So I want to go back to gerrymandering and yes. who's going to get out to vote. Because when you leave your African-American candidate off a flyer, and granted, it was only a few thousand out of right. millions that have been sent out, but it certainly made the media.
That is actually the biggest problem.
Do you are you turning away getting the African-American
I think that's the question.
Voters out? Are you, has the, and I keep bringing up this word, is the anti-Trump excitement, you know, all the people who were worked up in March and April, has that become inertia? And they're not going out to vote now because you've seen other Republicans, Cornyn, Flake, even at the federal level, who are sort of what I have called giving in. They've decided they're not going to run anymore. So there seems so he's winning there. Is he going to win here with Gillespie? And then you have gerrymandering. So at the state legislative level.
That is the question of the election. And I think that's why so many people around the country are watching the Virginia races, because New Jersey, it looks like, is a fairly Democratic state. And so it's not as so much of a bellwether for Trump's presidency.
And Christie has ruined that for the follow-up governor, Chris Christie.
So this race in Virginia, one good thing about it is we are kind of in the eye of the hurricane and everyone's attention is drawn on us. A lot of people are asking, you know, is this election a referendum on Trump's president first year in the office? I'm not sure how I feel about that. However, I will say, again, for maybe the fifth time, the people that come out to vote are going to tell us. They're going to tell us what they think about what's going on in our state. So whoever shows up, we're either going to go one way or the other. I know that sounds very vague, but we also have a statement at the Center for Politics that says those who go by the crystal ball end up eating broken glass. So, that being said, you know, I can sit here and tell you what research and what polling makes me think, but there's no real way to know. And I think that's the lesson not only of 2016, but also of other elections in the past. Like, people make predictions and then they're wrong and it's heartbreaking for them. So I don't want anybody to put all of their eggs in one basket.
But you do want them to go out and vote on Tuesday.
Oh, my gosh. Please go out and vote next Tuesday. I'm going to be out at the polls talking about redistricting with One Virginia 2021 and trying to get people to think about how our districts need to be put back into the hands of the voters instead of the elected officials selecting their voters. We should be selecting our officials.
All right. Thank you, Meg.
Thank you.
Meg Hubeck here joining us. All right, folks. Everyone enjoy your day. Hope to see you Tuesday at the polls.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.